Gracious God, take our minds and think through them. Take our hands and work through them. Take our hearts and set them on fire. Amen. One of my favorite seminary words is pericope, which autocorrect wants to change to periscope. So be aware of that when you're typing it in Word. Actually, that's not a totally bad image to have. A periscope helps you to see things that are otherwise outside of your field of vision, reaching up and out. The word pericope literally means a cutting out, as in taken out of context. Our lectionary readings each week are pericopes, little chunks of story taken from the Hebrew Scriptures, the New Testament, and the Gospels. They're cut out and placed side by side for our edification. This week's Gospel pericope is one that leans more to the side of taken out of context rather than simply cut out. And so, in order to look forward, we must first look back. Beginning in chapter 8 of Mark's Gospel, a pattern develops that gives deeper meaning to what may seem to be isolated events when we pull them out and read them separately. First came the healing of a blind man at Bethsaida. Then Jesus told the disciples for the first time about his upcoming death and resurrection. This was immediately followed by Peter putting his foot in his mouth when he rebuked Jesus for saying such things, and in turn Jesus uttered that infamous line, "Get behind me, Satan," before telling them all to take up their crosses and follow him. Next, Jesus told the disciples for the second time about his upcoming death and resurrection. This time, all the disciples got into the craziness together and debated amongst themselves who was the greatest, to which Jesus responded, whoever wants to be the greatest must be first and last of all and servant of all. After that, Jesus told them for a third time that upon entering Jerusalem, he would be killed, but would rise again. This is where today's pericope falls. James and John are seemingly the inappropriate ones this time, asking Jesus to be seated on his right and left, to which Jesus again teaches the disciples about servant leadership. And finally, next week, there comes the healing of the blind man called Bartimaeus. We see here in the last part of Mark, the last part of the story before the entry into Jerusalem and Jesus' passion, a pattern that begins and ends with sight being restored. While in the middle, we encounter Jesus making a final effort to open the eyes of his friends to what is coming and their seeming blindness to what he is pointing toward. Seeing today's pericope in this context makes James and John's question so much more than a first century version of, "I call shotgun." Yes, on the surface, their request seems self-absorbed and really rather clueless. Jesus has just told them for the third time that he will meet his death in Jerusalem. And we can read this like another case of the disciples just not getting it. But could it be something else? In the larger pattern, could this very well be a key moment of understanding and discipleship? Just like Peter's declaration not so many verses ago that Jesus is Messiah. They were on the road going up to Jerusalem, and Jesus was walking ahead of them. They were amazed, and those who followed him were afraid. He took the 12 aside again and began to tell him what was to happen to him, saying, "See, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be handed over to the chief priests and scribes, and they will condemn him to death. And then they will hand him over to the Gentiles. They will mock him and spit upon him and kill him. And after 3 days, he will rise again. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came forward to him and said, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." What do you see when we make this our pericope? I see that those who followed Jesus were afraid and getting closer to Jerusalem with every step. I see two of them who are remembering that in order to save their lives, they must lose them. And in order to be first, they must be servant to all. I see James and John nervous and so approaching Jesus with their request rather sheepishly. And I see two brothers who have left everything behind to follow Jesus, who now ask to follow him to the very end so that they might sit next to him always, despite their fears. I imagine Jesus giving them a good, hard look in the eye before saying, "You do not know what you are asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink? Are you to be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with?" And their response, "We are able." Again, I imagine Jesus pausing. In my mind, he closes his eyes and takes a deep breath, centering himself before replying, "The cup that I drink, you will drink. And the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right or my left is not mine to grant, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared." It's not a threat that Jesus makes, but a promise. A promise that their faith is seen. And just as Jesus will tell blind Bartimaeus in next week's pericope that his faith has made him well, so too their faith will empower them to follow him the rest of the way, even to the very end. The profoundness of this moment that these three friends shared is shattered when the rest of the disciples, who have heard the conversation but not really listened to what has been said, begin to grumble and get angry with James and John. "How dare they ask to sit at Jesus' left and right? Did we not all just have this conversation about who among us was the greatest, and they think it's them?" And so it is that Jesus makes his clearest statement yet of what he and they and we are called to do and be in this world. "You know that among the Gentiles, those whom they recognize as their rulers lord it over them, and their great ones are tyrants over them. But it is not so among you. Whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wishes to be first among you must be slave of all. For the Son of Man came not to serve, to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." To serve and to be slaves. This is what he tells the gathered group. "This is the way that it is to be among you if you are to follow me. To follow a servant Messiah, you must be a servant also." We are called to be servants and slaves. Servant, from the Greek, diakonos, and slave, from the Greek, doula. For Mark, these are the hallmarks of discipleship. What could that mean for us? For years, the priesthood of all believers has been a phrase and image used to ignite the ministry of all the baptized. But how about the diaconia of all believers. In the ordination service for deacons, we are exhorted that part of the role of deacons is to make Christ and his redemptive love known by word and example, and to interpret to the church the needs, concerns, and hopes of the world. In this way, deacons hold up a mirror, reflecting God's love and showing clearly the places in need in the world around us, not only to inspire, but indeed to lead us into the places of most need. These are essential aspects of being a deacon in the church, but they are not things limited to deacons only. This last week at our vestry meeting, our parish deacon, Mary Louise Hintz, presented, and the vestry discussed, a report that she and parishioner Dr. Christine Trost prepared upon completing a six-week online course called Changing Our Community, Changing Our World, offered by Episcopal Divinity School in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Their report, titled To Seek and Serve Christ in All Persons, Recommendations for Becoming a Diaconal Community of Faith, outlined what diaconal ministry is and how it can be expressed within a faith community. It had an assessment of the diaconia of all believers here at All Souls currently, and recommendations for how we can become a truly diaconal congregation. We are, in some ways, already entering into some aspects of diaconia. There are regular opportunities for service through open door dinner and serving meals at the Greater Richmond Interfaith Program. Our 20s and 30s group regularly serves homeless youth in the area at the Yay Shelter. Diaconia is not only about service, though. It must also include advocacy, that is, working for systematic change. The upcoming educational forum this Tuesday on Prop 34, the ballot measure that could end the death penalty here in California, is both an example of making God's love known and advocating for justice. What more we can do is limited only by our vision and our imagination. And what of being doulas? Does anyone here know what a doula is today in our context? Yes, some of you do. Doulas are trained professionals who provide support, experience, and information leading up to, during, and after childbirth. It's not as common of an image in the church, but I think this image of being doulas is one that holds great wonder and promise. What are the ways that we are assisting in the birth of hope and healing, justice and compassion in the world around us? Coming together week after week in the Eucharist is a sign of hope and healing. Proclaiming that all who seek Christ are welcome at God's table, and that through this sacrament, we become what we already are, proclaims justice and compassion. We are changed by that, and so we leave the doors of this parish with fresh eyes and fresh hearts. It is, I believe, a way for us to be fed, so that we may go in peace to love and serve in the wider world around us. Deacons and doulas, called to heal the world and spread the promise of God's extravagant love, the giving of service and faith that offers transformation for the world and for our very selves. Knowing this, would you not consider saying to Jesus too, Lord, grant that I may sit beside your side in glory. Have we not had various times in our lives where we have proclaimed we are able? All because when Jesus said, come and follow me, we too answered that call and joined the journey with other followers along the way, stumbling at times, but returning when needed, so that we also are called disciples. And Jesus' promise to James and John is a promise to us as well. This is stewardship season, when we are all asked, again, to take time to pray about the ways that we can pledge to give our time and our money in the upcoming year to support the mission and ministry of this community. We are in a unique position this year as we are discerning and distilling our vision for the coming years. As we anticipate the clarity that this vision statement will give us going forward, let us not forget that the way we have come and the work that needs to be done now, we must look back while still looking forward in order to gain a clear vision. And in the same way, we must give back so that we can give forward to grow our parish. Not growth for the sake of growth, but growth as a way of reaching further into the world in service and in love. To do this will take more of our collective time and money, two things that our culture tells us are always a scarcity. But God tells us something different. God's way is the way of abundance, an understanding that it is in giving that we receive, and it is in service that we inhabit the holy. And so no matter how we cut it, that is a truth that can never be taken out of context. Amen.